I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. Today's Thursday. I am expecting, though I did not confirm, somebody from Americans for Prosperity to be in next hour. I actually, last Thursday, we were scheduled to have Cade Yates in here, and I had a blowout in my car and couldn't make it to the studio. So we are attempting to re-up this week with Americans for Prosperity, but it's going to be a just a little surprise exactly who pops in. We're going to talk about, I would imagine they will have plenty to say about student loan forgiveness and the rest of the insanity coming out of our White House right now. The wheels are coming off of this of this truck. I'm telling you, and I've got some stories today about what's going on around the world. And you know, the things that are being said publicly by world leaders, these are people primarily in Europe we're going to take a look at. But I talked yesterday about, when do we have our Sri Lankan moment in the Western world? When do the people just say enough is enough and storm the citadels? I don't know if I admire the people in Europe for just coming out and saying, you know, in the United States here, they just keep telling us everything's okay. In Europe, they're basically telling them, oh, your life is about to suck. I mean, they're just coming out and telling people that straight to their face. Here, they try to pretend that everything's going to be fine, that we're doing great. This is the non-recession recession. They change definitions here, literally. Who is it? Wikipedia, caught constantly just changing definitions. As soon as the narrative coming from the government changes on something, they'll change the definition of a vaccine. They'll change the definition of a recession. In Europe, it's odd. They have a different tradition there. They just basically look their people in the face and say, oh, you're about to get prison pounded. Just get ready for it. I've got some news on that. And as I was reading the stories this morning, I was thinking to myself, how in the world do they think they're going to be able to get away with that? And then I realized, of course they think they're going to get away with it. Look what they've already gotten away with. They're emboldened. So we're going to take a look at the warnings to people of Europe. And I got to tell you, we're in largely the same boat. Quotes of the day today. Plato said, those who are able to see beyond the shadows and lies of their culture will never be understood, let alone believed, by the masses. That is not good news for this radio show. But I guess I'm used to it right now. I get emails from people constantly that show me that they don't understand me, and they certainly don't believe me. So I guess that is my fate, but I soldier on. Once again, Plato showing us that there is nothing new under the sun. G.K. Alsterholm. Is that what his name is? No. Sorry, this. Let me expand here. G.K. Chesterton. Sorry, I was tiny print, old eyes. That's all I can say. G.K. Chesterton said, it is terrible to contemplate how few politicians are hanged. It is terrible to contemplate how few politicians are hanged. That's a quote of the day right there for the Mike Madison Show. I started looking this morning. I haven't reported on, I've been trying to keep people apprised of exactly what's coming out of the Libertarian Party these days as they've changed and become the party from the Ron Paul revolution. And I find their stuff interesting. I give people these tweets so they know that there is, number one, to let people know there are more than two parties. And it's very interesting to me because I talk to a lot of conservatives and they're, yeah, I'm pretty libertarian. This is what they say, which to me is a kind of a honking sign that says, I kind of understand freedom, but I don't really understand freedom. No offense to those. It's baby steps. I've talked about it. It's baby steps. But I put these tweets and things out from the Libertarian Party because I'm just always interested in, you know, what could you possibly disagree with? These are in this day and time where conservatives seem to want their freedoms or rediscovering. As I said, it's like watching a toddler walk a few steps and then they fall on their butt. But they're trying and they're going to get there. So I put these libertarian tweets out there, see what you disagree with. The Libertarian Party of New Hampshire said this about the Biden scheme to forgive my son's student loan. You know, I've made a thing here, kind of taken it upon myself to do the public service of thanking the American taxpayer when they're not normally thanked. I've thanked you on behalf of Big Pharma. I've thanked you on behalf of the Ukrainian people. I mean, the U.S. taxpayer just does not get enough thank yous. Now that it's a possibility that my son will actually have $10,000 of his student loans just forgiven, just wiped away, I guess I should thank the U.S. taxpayer, those of you who paid off your student loans, your true heroes in my son's eyes. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, but the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire tweeted out, debt cancellation is theft. Someone else tweeted out, so when do we get income tax forgiveness? And the Libertarian Party tweeted out, it's no coincidence that the student loan, quote, forgiveness, unquote, is happening right after the IRS expansion. The upcoming losses in federal revenue from, quote, forgiven, unquote, payments will be made up by new tax hikes on the poor and middle classes, which Biden's new 87,000 IRS agents will enforce. Here is another one here that said, loan forgiveness is when a creditor declines collection of a debt. Taking money by force to pay back someone else's debt isn't forgiveness, it's theft. Don't adopt terminology designed to help evil people win. Now, this was I thought this was kind of funny. The House Judiciary for the GOP, the Republican Party, they tweeted out, you know, Republicans are making great points. I mean, this student loan forgiveness is one of the most absurd things I've ever seen. It's a blatant bribe to voters. I don't know where Joe Biden gets the authority to do this. I mean, the whole thing stinks to high heaven. Even with my son apparently about to be on the receiving end of it. I've decided what I'm going to do about that. I'll explain in a second. But the House Judiciary of the Republican Party tweeted out, if you take out a loan, you pay it back, period. To that, the Libertarian Party of Ohio tweeted back at the House GOP Judiciary, said, how much does the federal government owe to other countries again? I mean, it is a bit rich. It is a bit rich for the Republican Party, either one of the two big political parties, but the Republican Party, who's on the opposite side of the student loan forgiveness, for them to tweet out, if you take out a loan, you pay it back, period, as they sit atop $30 trillion in debt that everybody knows will never, ever be paid back, at least not with any dollars that are worth anything whatsoever. And they are continually taking out more loans to pay back the loans that they took out before in the Great American Ponzi scheme. So, yeah, Republicans, I wouldn't be making a big deal about your moral stance on if you take out a loan, you pay it back. Jesse Kelly, one more thing here. So, you know, sometimes I get on a stream of these things, these tweets and quotes. Goes in with quotes of the day. Jesse Kelly, I guess he's a conservative. I don't know who Jesse Kelly is. I know who Jesse Waters is. I assume they are different people. Jesse Kelly is, a conservative commentator, but I found this interesting. He said, I owe an apology to every Ron Paul guy who warned me about the Patriot Act. They were all right, and I was a naive idiot who supported something terrible. Now, the reason he sent this out, he finishes with this. He says, see that, COVID lockdowners? It's remarkably easy to admit mistakes. You can't and you won't because you lack confidence. Now, he's right. I like this. As I say, I think it's maybe a little petty to, you know, need an apology from somebody, but it's still nice to get. Everybody likes to get an apology when somebody's wrong, but this is a normie conservative saying, yeah, the Ron Paul guys who warned you about the Patriot Act were actually right, and he's admitting it, and he's also right about people who stick to their positions when it comes to lockdowns, when it comes to mass experimental vaccinations, when people decide they're on one side of things, even though it goes completely sideways and turns out to be a disaster, the vast majority of people will try to figure out how to never say that they were wrong. This is the Anthony Fauci line of, well, it's the science is evolving. So anyway, I thought about following up this Jesse Kelly tweet with, I owe an apology to every Ron Paul guy who warned me about the Patriot Act, with a list of other warnings that libertarians are giving conservatives that are not being heeded right now, that I would imagine at some point you may have to apologize for not listening to us. But that list is long, and I probably don't have enough time in the show today. Anyway, we're going to take a break and come back and look at the booming Biden economy. The non-recession recession. Yesterday we talked about 1 in 6 Americans is past due on their power bills. 1 out of every 6 Americans at risk of having their power cut off. That's a hefty chunk. Well, we've got some new news in the business community as well. And these numbers are, I think I overused the term shocking, but they are shocking, particularly for such a robust economy the White House keeps telling us about. I'll be right back. I met a young girl the other day who was born in Russia. I think she still has dual citizenship between Russia and the United States. Her parents still have some connections there. I don't know that she's a spy. I asked her. She said no. But I was talking to her, and we were, you know, I constantly am amazed as somebody who grew up in the 80s and remember them talking about propaganda and Pravda, the state-run media in the Soviet Union. And I really believe, I've said it before, I'm kind of repeating myself, I'd like to go back and look at Pravda from 1987, 88, before the fall of communism in the Soviet Union. And I would just imagine that the headlines were, everything's going great. We're crushing it. Never had so many jobs. You know, I mean, something along those lines, I'm sure was across the newspapers in the Soviet Union just moments, probably the day before the Soviet Union fell, they were probably telling them, everything's just humming along. We see another 100 years of prosperity. So the Biden White House is, with the complicity of the mainstream media, you know, it is so funny to think we've had 2 quarters of negative GDP to start out 2022, and they have tried to, within weeks sometimes, they said that a recession is officially when you have 2 quarters of negative GDP growth, and then a few weeks later said, no, that's not true. We never said that. Unfortunately, the internet always catches up with you, and people have put out lots of screenshots of quotes that just show the hypocrisy, or even a video of these people. That's why I love the internet so much. You would think we'd be able to hold people accountable better with the internet. For some reason, we still don't. They still get away with it. But can you even imagine if Donald Trump had come out and said, after 2 quarters of negative growth, if Trump had come out and said, well, it's not a recession. That never meant a recession. Can you imagine the brutalization that he would suffer at the hands of the mainstream media and the Democrats if he tried to pull a stunt like that? But the Biden administration trying to redefine things with the complicity of the mainstream media, and I think all the way down to Wikipedia, where they just changed the definition of recession. But I've been reporting on this for a while. We're in a recession. It's still, it is a surreal to see their stories. Yesterday, I read a story. It said something along the lines of American economists predict likelihood of a recession before the end of 2023. I'm just thinking, we're in a recession now. What is going on? It's like standing waist deep inside a flooded Jackson home. And they say, there's a possibility there may be some flooding next year sometime as they slosh around waist deep in water. It's strange. But anyway, some concerning things, numbers. I'm going to give some visualizations for this. I talked a few weeks ago when they put out the July report, but Alignable, this is a group that surveys business owners, they've got their new August rent report out yesterday, I believe it was. It says, unfortunately, rent problems among small businesses have just broken a new record for 2022. Some 40% of small business owners could not pay their August rent on time and in full, up 6% from July. Previously, the highest delinquency rate for this year was 2022. Now, this obviously spiked during COVID when they shut them down completely. But these numbers are just, if you can just imagine looking at every strip mall you see, every large, you know, commercial retail area, and just look through it and just imagine that 40%, 4 out of every 10 of those businesses suddenly just closed the doors and put going out of business signs up in the windows. Essentially, that's what's happening. We're just not seeing the signs yet because I'm sure landlords understand this tsunami of defaults that is revving up here, and they're probably trying their best to work with their tenants to forestall the inevitable, which is the collapse of particularly Main Street. And really, to be honest with you, if interest rates keep going up, even the big Wall Street companies are going to have huge problems. They've taken on massive debt when interest rates were incredibly low. And now with interest rates rising, they cannot refinance that debt. You're going to see big Wall Street firms, Wall Street retailers, national companies also shrinking their footprints and abandoning these places. But 40% of people said they could not pay the rent on time and in full. There were some other statistics in here that are just pretty amazing. Boy, my heart just breaks for the small business owner these days. 45% say they're planning at least, they're paying at least 50% more in rent than they did prior to COVID. 24% of these businesses have landlords doubling their rent, and 12% say they're paying three times more for their rent than they did prior to COVID. Rent issues are even worse for minority-owned firms, as 53% of their owners say they couldn't afford August rent. That's up 4% from July. It goes through all the delinquency rates of different sectors. And it's just absolutely amazing just the effects of what we're seeing in this inflation. Now, there's a lot of people out there who believe it is all Joe Biden who created this with his bad energy policies, and you're not wrong that he has exacerbated any problem that might have existed, but you don't raise rents because of power costs. This is inflation, and this is because of the expansion of the money supply done under Republicans and Democrats, including Trump, Obama. Obama really kicked off the party of true inflation. Of course, George W. Bush spent so much in his bogus war on terror that it certainly teed it up, and then Obama knocked it out of the park with printing money, and then Donald Trump kept it going, and Joe Biden is now he's proposing $300 billion in forgiving student loans, which is going to be inflationary. It's quite amazing to think the people that are going to sit by the Joe Biden supporters, I guess. I don't know if there's I don't know if that's really even a category. Are there truly Joe Biden supporters, or they're just Republican haters? I would imagine the ratio of that has got to be at least 10-1, right? I don't think Joe Biden himself has any support, but the people who are happy that Donald Trump is not there and that the Democrats are in control of things, I don't know how these people don't understand exactly what's coming their way. They just bailed out a bunch of college kids. And this is a lot of people, but I guess poor people that vote Democrat for some reason, well, it keeps them poor. But I guess poor people who vote for Democrats think, well, I don't pay taxes anyway. I get my earned income tax credit. See, if they understood inflation, if they understood that Joe Biden waving his magic executive wand somehow and forgiving these student loans, if they realized how inflationary that was, even though they don't pay taxes on a 1040 form, if they were to understand that inflation is actually a tax and what Joe Biden's doing with student loans is going to exacerbate inflation, and so every single day with every product that they buy, the excess cost there is that tax that funds other people's college, they might not be so so happy about it. But this is where we are. I'm going to take a break and then come back and look at, there's headlines out of Europe, out of the UK, where the leadership in these countries, they're disgusting, horrific globalist. I keep using the term elites. They're not special people. I need to find a different word. They're not leaders. They're not an elite people. They're just the top of the heap. They're the people who have somehow conned their way to the top of a system and are above us all, at least in their view. They are coming out and they're being very honest with the people in Europe and the UK. And I really think that probably we should take these statements from these leaders in Europe and just accept them as kind of our fate too, even though our government for some reason is still peddling the lie that everything is fine and the outlook is rosy. We should just accept that these people are really talking to us too. They're being more honest about it. They're disgusting, vile creatures, but at least they're preparing their citizens for what's coming up next. And as I say, I scratch my head, particularly as a libertarian who just has such utter contempt for these people. I scratch my head of wondering how they think they're going to get away with what they're doing, because this is not some act of nature. This is not some act of God that is taking place. These are all deliberate policies by the people in charge, and they are telling the people how badly these policies that they are enacting are going to work out for their own people. And they think they're going to get away with this. But when you look at what we've already gone through, the closures of our schools, our businesses, our churches, just in the past couple of years, I think they've been emboldened and think, well, I mean, if we can do this, if we can force a parent to strap on a dirty mask onto their child and send them into school, if we can force business owners to shut their doors and not provide for their families and send them a $1,200 check instead, if we can do all those things, surely we can get away with the rest of it. I think this is really what the reaction was after they killed Kennedy. I'm sure they kind of battened down the hatches and said, oh, this is about to get bad. Probably all had their passports lined up, ready to head off to Argentina or wherever they needed to bug out to. And then nothing happened to them. And they thought, oh, huh. We can do whatever we want to. We can assassinate a sitting president in broad daylight in front of a crowd of people and nothing happens to us. And this has led to the deep state that we're still suffering under now. Well, the leaders in Europe and UK are being honest with their people. Listen to some of the things they're telling their citizens when we come back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. I am always trying to kind of figure out where we are in history. I think it's pretty accurate, this idea of a fourth turning. About every 80 to 100 years, we have some major upheaval, you know, kind of around the world, here in the United States. We go back to World War II, before that, the Civil War. I mean, there seem to be cycles that do repeat, and it feels like we are in some kind of a very strange cycle. Sometimes if you get really absorbed in the news, you can get a kind of a dark energy to it. And I'm always trying to get some kind of perspective and see, is this real? You know, it's always funny to me. I've been around teenagers either when I had teenagers or in work settings and stuff like that. And you see, you know, sometimes teenagers will have something happen in their life and they'll just think that their life is just over. And if you have the benefit of hindsight as an older adult, you want to almost laugh at them and go, you have no idea. That is such a nothing. And so, you know, sometimes we take things that are happening at a particular time almost too, we jack them up to be this existential threat to all of us. And I'm kind of always on guard to that, although right now feels very strange. We are changing definitions. This mass experiment with the shots has really kind of freaked me out, to be honest with you. This quite obviously on its face is not something that's ever been done before. They've always tested vaccines for 7 to 12 years. They rolled this one out in a few months and started jamming it into arms, and we got pediatricians telling toddlers to take this stuff. I think that's extremely serious on the personal level. That's not to mention the fact that we had, you know, the entire world's economy shut down by a bunch of bureaucrats and politicians, just people who were engaged in perfectly legal, moral, great behavior of running businesses and churches and schools, just told to sit down and shut up, stay home. So these feel, these have a dark energy to them. And it feels like I've seen some encouraging stories about the fact that this is showing the end of globalism. That it's just, it is going to be shown. I mean, and we're seeing it now. It's just a massive failure. Now, I'm somebody who is certainly a free trade guy. You know, I think some countries are better at manufacturing. Some countries have better, different natural resources, trading among them. But this idea of kind of a global governance structure, more and more people are going to realize this is not for them. And I would imagine in Europe, there's got to be a lot of people, or at least I would think. I'm always depressed when I find out people, you know, people are okay with going along. But, you know, what the EU has done to Europe. Europe was really a pretty fascinating place when you look at the size of it and even the size of countries there, some of them, you know, the size of U.S. states, but just dramatically different cultures. Fascinating place to visit because you can get a you can get on the trains there and hop from country to country and be in just totally different lands, different architecture, different languages, different cultures. And they allowed this EU to sit atop all of them and try to homogenize all these countries and enact rules across all of them when the people have different interests and different cultures. But they've really tried to roll this out. You know, the World Health Organization calls the shots for the entire planet. Well, I think most thinking people would understand what they've done has been a disaster. And so there's a lot of encouraging articles out there that says this is the death of globalism. But it feels to me like a kind of like a cornered raccoon. You know, they are really lashing out now, and they are coming out in Europe, in the UK, and they're coming out and just telling their people, your life is about to really suck. Now, here in the United States, as I keep saying, for some reason, they can't be honest with us about that. And none of these people are honest with why this is happening, that they're doing it on purpose, that these are actually their policies. This is not an act of God that is causing these things to happen. They are bringing down the world's economy, it appears. So I'm going to get to some of these things that they're telling their people in Europe. With much of Europe facing a cold winter thanks to the war in Ukraine, and again, not thanks to the war in Ukraine, thanks to the reaction of the governments in Europe over the war in Ukraine, various leaders have been sounding the alarm over, quote, sacrifices people are going to have to make. And listen to some of these statements. On Wednesday, EU policy chief Joseph Borrell warned that, quote, wary, unquote, EU populations would have to endure deep economic pain and a severe energy crunch, while calling on the citizenry to, quote, bear the consequences, unquote, with continued resolve. Now, a lot of this is all about they're trying to convince the people of Europe, hey, this is all Vladimir Putin's fault. In order to show down Vladimir Putin, you're going to have to freeze. Now, I don't know how many people in Europe are buying this, but this is how they are suggesting it. They'll ignore, we're trying to transition you to green energy. We've sacrificed our grids and power generation. But the cutoff of Russian natural gas to Europe, which is very interesting because I remember just a couple of years ago, the United States telling Europe, you don't need Russian natural gas. We've got all you need over here. And it's strange because they did cut off the Russian natural gas, and it doesn't seem like we're there for them. The same day, Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo went much further, suggesting that, quote, the next 5 to 10 winters will be difficult. Let's see. This was another one, and yet another ominous warning in what must have been a coordinated messaging. French President Emmanuel Macron on Wednesday went even further, warning at his first cabinet meeting after the summer holidays that the French should expect to make deep sacrifices in what he called the, quote, end of abundance. The end of abundance. These are world leaders sitting atop these European countries. Basically, they are telling their citizens the good days are over. Batten down your hatches. Now, we know, of course, all of these people, these global elites, for lack of any better term, they will make no sacrifices. Their lives will only get better and more abundant. But they are telling millions and millions of people, and this is what I find so fascinating, and I've talked about it before. Why do 330 million Americans sit back and wait for what 537 corrupt guys and gals in Washington, D.C. tell them how much of their income they can keep? How do we allow 537 corrupt guys and gals up in Washington, D.C. to dictate the behaviors, the freedoms, the regulations on our lives of 330 million Americans? That they are such a small, tiny number. Well, I do understand why. We've allowed ourselves to create a police state here, conservatives, I'm looking at you, which protects this 537 and all of their minions throughout all the city governments and everywhere else that they're enacting these horrific policies. But these little handful of these people in Europe are just there going straight to their people and go, your life's about to suck. Get ready. Now, why they're not storming the castles of Europe already, I don't know. They can see this coming from a mile away. This winter has the potential to be brutal. I guess the European citizenry are just waiting to see if it's really as bad as they say. But their leadership is saying, oh, it's going to be bad. You better get some extra coats. I think it was yesterday I was talking about one of the leaders over there, and it might have been Belgium, where he said, hey, no, it was Germany. He said, hey, the washcloth is a great substitute for a shower. This is what they are telling their people, and so far we've really seen, outside of Sri Lanka, very little action. Energy executives in the UK have warned the government that the country faces the prospect of mass civil unrest as a result of people being unable to afford their heating and electricity bills this winter. Energy company bosses have warned ministers they fear civil unrest if nothing is done to cushion the blow of rising bills. And, you know, we know what they're going to do. I read you the statistics about small businesses that can't make their rent. They are probably going to be bailed out. What is that going to cause? More inflation, which is going to put these small business owners who maybe get bailed out on their rent further behind the eight ball because the inflationary pressures will make their businesses even harder to operate. There's no good way out. Well, outside of guillotines. I believe guillotines would solve a lot of problems, but that's just me. I'm ready to get into the guillotine business whenever people are ready for it. But anyway, these things are happening. And I keep wondering, how are they thinking that they're going to get away with this? 5 to 10 winters. That guy didn't say, hey, this is going to be a tough winter, but it's a sacrifice. There is actually a billboard. Let me see if I can find that thing in this story. There's a billboard, a big billboard in, I'm trying to figure, I got these two stories pulled up. Let me see. This must have been in the UK. It was a big billboard. It was just half, you know, the top half was yellow and the bottom half was blue. It was the Ukrainian flag, and it essentially said, "You're going to be cold this winter because they need it more." And so I guess they have got the British people or whatever country this was in. I can't see this thing on either one of might have been on a Twitter stream somewhere. You've got people convinced that these are sacrifices that you're somehow making for the Ukrainian people. The Ukrainian people are being used as cannon fodder right now by these same global elites. They know they could have solved this whole issue between Ukraine and Russia, as I keep saying, in an afternoon, acknowledging Russia's ethnic Russians' right to be unmolested in eastern Ukraine, not slaughtered by the Ukrainian government. Recognize their autonomy and everybody goes home and they just peacefully coexist. Now, they could fix these things, but I guess they've got the the people in Europe thinking that they are somehow going to freeze this winter. They're opening up warming centers and stadiums and community centers. So there'll be one place where you can go get warm if you want to. I mean, this is, as I say, I try to figure out how exactly they think they can get away with this, but I just realized they've already gotten away with so much. You almost don't blame them for being incredibly bold. As a libertarian, I see the abuses of our government much more quickly than the vast majority of people, because I come at it from a basis that we're free people. God created us as free human beings, and the government lays no claims on our bodies or our incomes or anything else. They are, if they have to exist at all, they have no business in our lives. But most people don't believe that. Most people want to fight over who gets to control our lives. I want the Republicans to control my life, but I want the Democrats to control my life. I want the Republicans to control your life. You want the Republicans to, or the Democrats to control my life. I mean, this is what it is. So I see the abuses. They are a multitude. There are many of them. So I guess they have just become so emboldened. But this feels like a tipping point. The power companies in England talking about the fact that there could be civil unrest. So maybe they're already understanding that this final push towards dismantling the Western way of life, the era of abundance, as they try to end the era of abundance for hundreds of millions of people, I guess they realize there may be some small pushback to that. They're going to go ahead and warn about it. But the end of abundance, according to Emmanuel Macron. The only thing I can say, though, is at least they're being honest. Joe Biden's trying to pretend like everything's fine, and what he's doing is making things better. At least the people in Europe will admit it's going to get a hell of a lot worse.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, only got a few minutes left in this hour, and then we're going to come back with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. We'll probably talk about a little bit about the student loan stuff. I do have a clip. I'll be honest with you. I couldn't listen to more than about 45 seconds of Joe Biden rolling out through coughs. He couldn't stop coughing. I actually wanted to stay. There's some people behind him. I wanted to stay. He kept coughing into his hand. He wore his mask up to the podium, and then he kept coughing in his hand. I was waiting to... I know he shook somebody's hand after he got done coughing into his hand. But anyway, oh, speaking of that, I heard Jill Biden had a rebound. Let's see if I'd made a note on that. This was the headline. Jill Biden reinfected in another, quote, rare, unquote, rebound case of COVID. I haven't even clicked on this story. Joe also had the rare rebound. Anthony Fauci had the rare rebound. Just about everybody has had the rare rebound. Here we go. Yeah. Biden first tested positive. They're talking about Dr. Jill. Dr. Jill first tested positive on August 15th while vacationing in Kiowa Island, South Carolina. First lady had cold-like symptoms, according to Alexander. It's put on a cycle of the antiviral drug Paxlovid, which can trigger a rebound case of COVID-19 in some people several days after a negative test result. So another big hit for Pfizer and its Paxlovid, which apparently actually brings it back, and brings it back typically worse. Your second bound is actually worse. So Jill Biden has had her another rare rebound case. You know, I don't know if Wikipedia has changed the definition of rare along with a definition of recession, but there's a whole lot of things out there that are rare that seem to be quite common. I might have to go back and re-educate myself on exactly what rare means. But we got Joe Biden talking about waving his magic wand, and I'm still curious, and maybe we'll talk to Starla about this. She understands policy and politics better than I do. I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of the whole system, so I probably don't need the details like I should. But I'm not sure exactly what power Joe Biden had to wave a wand and just forgive. I mean, that's a pretty big power. I would say. I mean, does this mean that the next Republican president could just go up and wave a wand of anybody who owes income taxes? That's what I'd like to see. Because if this is the precedent, say use it against them. Well, we got a clip of that. One of Obama's advisors, his chief economic advisor, has said, quote, pouring roughly $500 billion of gasoline on the inflationary fire that is already burning is reckless. It almost feels like they are tiptoeing around the very obvious fact to many of us that government spending is what causes inflation, not Vladimir Putin. That's strange. So one of even Obama's guys, it's said that Obama's running this White House, so I get confused on all of the different relationships. But this was also Barack Obama who oversaw the just huge expansion of money printing during QE1, QE2, QE3, Operation Twist, the bailouts there. This was Jason Furman. He is the guy who said that they are pouring fuel on an inflationary fire. So everybody's going to pay the price for this. As I've said, my son will be on the receiving end of it, and I want to thank all the American taxpayers who helped put my son through college. I had no idea you felt that way about him, but he's a good kid. He's a good kid. He'll do good things with his life, so you can be proud to know that you helped put him through college. So anyway, all right, we're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll have Starla Brown with Americans for Prosperity. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Right into this world, all alone, God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. Every Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with somebody from Americans for Prosperity. And today we've got the head cheese in here, Starla Brown. Starla, appreciate you joining me again.
Yeah, great to be back. A bit away of a couple of Thursdays here. So
yeah. I had a blowout last week. I couldn't get to the studio. And I'm seriously contemplating getting remarried just to have access to a second vehicle.
Right.
There's several different I don't like to do laundry either. I'm terrible at laundry. But the second vehicle I'm thinking about, I may go Russian bride.
Yeah, there you go. That might be a plus, right?
I bet there's some Ukrainian women that wouldn't mind coming over these days.
Right. I was listening to you driving up about these winters ahead. So
it's amazing. They are just they're just destroying people's lives with policies. You know, this is not these aren't inevitable. You know, things that were just going to come about anyway. They are driving, whether it's these green energy policies, whether it is the isolation of Russia with all these resources, they are making these things happen and then looking straight into those people's faces and going, it's about to really be bad for you. Get ready.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's really easy. Sometimes we get hyper-focused on one segment of the government, right? And we say, like, okay, you know, the federal government's doing this. And a lot of people get hyper-focused there and, oh, this is, you know, it's terrible, it's bad. But they forget what their local government's doing or, in the case of Jackson, not doing.
Yeah.
And then you look at the state government and you say, well, you know, what are the policies that have gone on, maybe things that should have passed, didn't pass, and what's happening there? And I think sometimes what happens is there's a lot to keep up with these days. I mean, if you're the contact voter out there and the citizen that we work with, especially in our grassroots portion of things, it's a lot to keep up with. I mean, we're doing our darn best to keep up with it, you know, on our side. And I know some days I get up and I start with, you know, we start with some pretty early morning news. I'm an early riser, so I start looking at headlines that might have broken overnight, looking at things that come up, and kind of have my sources that I like, my go-to places. And I sit there some mornings and I'm thinking, what to tackle?
I know.
Right?
Well, I think that's almost kind of part of our problem is that you become so distracted. It's just like squirrel, you know, you can be really hyper focused on one particular thing that, you know, like, this just cannot stand. We need to change this. And everybody gets energized for it. A week later, something else pops up and people move from one thing to another. And there's just no time to stay really laser focused on one particular thing. Just kind of the onslaught of issues that are coming at us.
Right. But I will say this, I'm confident, and our organization is confident, that at the top of the American individuals list and the average citizen out there, especially the middle class, and maybe even more so to some extent people in poverty who are trying to get out of poverty, right? Or maybe right on that cusp, or, you know, or maybe headed toward poverty because they were middle class at these days. At the top of that list is inflation. And yet every day I just, you know, I do that news kind of search, and you just see more of the federal government doing things, passing bad policies, passing bad bills, putting out bad bills to, you know, for consideration or ideas that are just going to increase inflation.
Yeah.
There's no one's looking
including
at
the
a real
Inflation
solution.
Reduction Act or whatever, whatever that
thing
I
called
was
it the Inflation Redux Act, but that was just my spin on it. But honestly, you know, there just weren't things in there to reduce inflation.
Of course
And the person who truly understands, like, that you can't tax and spend your way out of inflation, you can't print more money, you can't put this sort of false economy out there and induce that into the real economy, right? And not have inflation go up. It's been interesting to watch. The people who say, you know, it's almost like here comes the federal government, here comes this new thing, and here's my savior, right? And you and I were talking a little bit in the break about student loans, right? You've been talking about them this morning on the show some. Interesting to me, you have a huge voting block, right? You have a huge voting block of individuals across this country. In some states, number one voting block.
Young kids,
the millennials, you know, people maybe, you know, millennials especially who've already come through college, a lot of them now at this point, and are paying those student loans. Huge voting block, and you've got all this excessive inflation, their lives, you know, trying to find jobs, you know, they're being affected and impacted just like everyone else. And all of a sudden, getting close to election day, here's what we're going to do for you.
Yep. Oh, of course. It's a bribe.
Yeah.
It's a bribe. Well, I was talking, I think it makes more sense. I don't know why they didn't say, we are putting together a legislative package to forgive these student loans. It'll be the first thing we do in the next Congress. I mean, it seems like that's a better teaser for people, but maybe they realize people don't trust them. I don't know. It just feels like they've kind of already gotten it. But you know, the thing to me is about young people is I don't give them a pass. I want them to understand what causes inflation, to understand it's morally wrong to steal from one group of people and take stuff. But if you are coming out of school right now, I imagine you look at the landscape and you go out and you look at your student loan debt and you don't understand the mechanism of how the government made college so expensive to force you to take those loans. So you get out and you've got all these student loans. Then you think, okay, well, I'm going to do what my parents did. I'm going to get out of college. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to go buy a house. And then you start looking at housing prices. And you say, oh, my gosh, how the hell am I going to afford a house? So these kids are coming out. And when I was in my 20s, I was not a sharp, well-educated. I mean, you know, I didn't understand economy. There's a lot of things I didn't understand. They're looking at this situation, and we really can't blame them for thinking somebody's got to help us here. You know, this is unattainable. I can't pay off $100,000 in student loans and afford a $600,000 starter home in, you know, a lot of these cities. And they don't understand the problems there. So this feels kind of self-fulfilling of itself. You make and it's the even for poor people in poverty. At this point, if they can just get some relief, they don't care about the long-term consequences of inflation. Number one, they can't tie those things together. But number two, they're worried about making their rent tomorrow. You know, and so we're kind of being led by crisis. And it feels like the more and more people get desperate, any lifeline that comes out is going to be popular because forget about I don't care what it's going to happen a year down the road because of this. I need help today.
Right. And that puts us in sort of that, you know, I remember that term, the me generation, right? It's all about me. It's all about where I'm at because people are becoming desperate, right? I mean, there are segments of society that are living in very desperate times. And I think we created through government these items or these, you know, policies, agencies, whatever you want to call it, however it gets grouped out there, but that were to be those safety nets for some people for those times, right? Like, I mean, there are people in society that need that safety net for maybe a short period of time or they need whatever, but we're grossly away from safety nets. And that's now becoming the way people live their lives.
Yeah,
right?
Lifestyle.
Right. It becomes a lifestyle. You have generational poverty. We have not solved poverty, right? If anything, it statistically is getting worse, right? Especially right now, and it's easy to see because you're actually forcing some people into it through the inflationary practices.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know. It's difficult, and I, you know, I look at, you're right. Young people have to understand there's not just a short game here, right? There's a long game here. For the economic status of our country and what that's going to look like. And so to think like, hey, you know, I'm getting a little break here, you know, but again, if it's $100,000, right? And the other side of it is what I think young people don't understand is student loans took away competition among colleges, right? It drove prices up.
Oh, yeah.
So college became unaffordable,
right?
Because of student loans, not in lieu of them, right? And so, yeah, look, I mean, you know, not everybody has the money or had the opportunity, depending on where they come from, right? Or what their family status was. And so honestly understand that there are some people who needed that. But the problem was it became just so prolific that, you know, if I'm a college out there, hey, everybody can go now. Everybody can afford to go because the money's just free flowing, and I'll just keep charging more and more each year. Yeah. And
college became almost a social program.
Sure.
And Biden, I don't know if we're going to bother to play his speech, but you know, that was what he's saying yesterday's. It did one of these things where he talks about how we have the, you know, we had the most educated people in the world, all of these platitudes. But now college, you know, he says 12 years is not enough. We're learning now in the new global economy. We've been lapped by other countries. He doesn't talk about our failing public educational system of K through 12, which we've just decimated because of government interference in it. Instead, it's just like everything else. We just need to do more. We need to tack on 4 more years of essentially publicly funded education for our students. And so college has become this, it's a social program now. This is the first salvo in this. This is not the end. This is not we're going to forgive 10,000 if you won the lottery, and I guess within some time period, like my son is right smack, he's going to graduate next year. He's a student right now. I guess he hit the lottery. He's going to get this 10,000. But, you know, what do you do in 5 years? You can't, those kids, you can't tell them, oh, we gave the people a few years ago 10,000. Yeah, you got to give them 10,000. But of course, by then, the 10,000 is going to have to be 25,000 or 50,000. You know, this is just the beginning of free college, which is going to be horrific expenditure for the federal government.
Yeah. And, you know, universities, I'm sure there are some universities sitting back and saying, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
The gravy train just cranked up. And you know, a lot of our universities and college systems are looking at this as like, oh, wow, this is growth, you know. So, but there is no competition. There's no, it's a very perverse incentive at that level. And, you know, it remains to be seen how this is all going to turn out. But, you know, look, I know right now there are a lot of people who are frustrated. I see it. I see the key.
That's an understatement.
The key, you know, and I probably
furious.
Yeah, I don't even know if I've made a public comment on social media. I see the keyboard warriors. Everybody's very frustrated, and rightfully so. They should. Everybody should be screaming from the top. But one of the things I'm going to say is, you know what? The White House has a phone number. The White House has a phone number. And if it's still staffed the same way it was, it's by volunteers who answer those calls coming in to send messages to the president. Don't just type out your frustrations. I mean, that's important because a lot of us who work in public policy want to get a good message out about why this is bad and educate people about what's going to happen and how it's not right and the implications. But past that, for those of you who are frustrated because you're now the taxpayer who's going to be, you know, like I said the other day, I was like, I'm wondering who I'm putting through college, right?
My son.
Right. Okay.
I've already thanked everybody. Okay. How many times do I have to thank everybody?
All right. Well, if I've got to put somebody through, it might as well be your son, right?
Yeah.
Right. But I think what people need to do, like burn up that phone, like start calling your frustrations and start putting them in, because they need to hear from you. They need to hear from you in a solid way, not just that you know, made a post on social media and said like, hey, I'm really frustrated. This is really bad. We're all doing that. But I think it's time for people to really get out there in a grassroots movement sort of way and let the White House know, because this was not Congress. We don't even know yet. I think there's still some back and forth about whether this really was constitutional. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so I
can't imagine how it is. I mean, if this is, I mean, I love the precedent. If they want to set this precedent, then the first Republican that comes up and says, if you got any past due income taxes, we're waving the wand.
Yeah.
You're free and clear. I mean,
yeah,
that's,
I was thinking
what would, if you can do this, but of course we've just lived through a time where the CDC told private landlords they couldn't collect rent from their own tenants. I mean, so it feels like there are no constitutional guards on anything anymore.
Correct.
If Washington, D.C. says it, it be so. It's crazy.
Right. And I think, you know, the message here really is it's Washington, D.C. It's everybody.
Yes.
It doesn't, you know, and I commend some of the people who, regardless of party, who are speaking up and you know, I mean, even in the Inflation Reduction Act, I got to say, I mean, you know, I'm no Bernie Sanders fan, but he at least spoke up and said, hey, this isn't going to actually reduce inflation, right? He was really kind of point on in that. And so I think it doesn't matter. I don't think people care anymore which party it is. I think people are just fed up with what's happening and what and what's coming out of the federal government, period, regardless of party. And so, you know, I'm confident they feel this way. And so, look, D.C., you know, the message to you is you got to rein it in. And it's reining in the spending. It's raining.
I don't think it's ever
going
to happen. I think they have to default. I mean, I think there has to be some catastrophic, I don't know, Starlight. They're talking about these central bank digital currencies. It feels to me like they understand what is about to happen, and they are putting together the corral to move us all into something else really, really quick when this whole thing falls apart. Right. It's that's some scary stuff to me.
Yeah, it is scary. I mean, if you're not concerned about it, if you're not out there engaged in some manner, I encourage you to get engaged. I mean, you know, whether it's us or it's any other organization, whatever it looks like to you, I encourage people to start getting engaged. And if you don't know what to do, or you don't know how to make these calls, you don't know how to go out there and get in off, you know, in front of people that you need to be talking to in the government, you know, let us know. We'll be happy to train you to be a better advocate. But we've all got to do this. It can't be there's a handful of people over here talking about it. There's a handful of people over here working on it. It's got to be a movement in this country. And I'm not, you know, advocating for some sort of like anarchy or riotous type of movement.
That's me. That's right?
That's the one you'll join. But but from my perspective, I'm not advocating for something like that. What I'm advocating for is people really, really making sure that they're in constant contact, they're building relationships with the people in government. You need to know the people that serve you, right? And that's the key point here. People go to Washington, D.C. People go to Jackson, Mississippi, you know, to serve you.
Well, people need to re-exert their authority. These are supposed to be representatives of us.
Absolutely.
And that, we are so far from that right now. It just, I don't know anybody who really feels like these people work for us, particularly in the federal government. You know, the state government, you do have some impact, and that's why I've liked getting involved with America's Prosperity, because it's kind of taught me that and how important the local stuff is. I think the national stuff is kind of sexier for me to sit here and bitch about, to be honest with you. But
right.
The local stuff is so much more important, all the way from city councils and school boards and state government. They're easier to affect. You can actually make changes there. You can hold them accountable much easier. Washington, D.C. feels pretty lost to me. But people have got to reassert themselves. But we've gone a long way, and that also, you know, talking about there being so many different issues that everybody's concerned about, it's kind of hard to get people all together on the same page just to demand that we are back in charge, because we're so fractured by what our issue is. You know what I mean? And so getting everybody under a tent, to because, you know, 100,000 people is much more powerful than 10 groups of, you know, 100 each. You know what I mean? I mean, it's hard to get people together on things to just say the political class is the problem right now. They're not listening to us. Mm-hmm. They haven't for what appears to be a pretty long time. It's time to start either recycling these politicians, sending them home, primarying them as much as you can. I mean, just some action's got to take place to reassert, you know, people's voice.
Right. Well, and you talk about people coming together. One of the things that's critical here is we've got to care about each other, right? I've got to, you know, it's real easy sometimes to be in one place. You know, yesterday, I was thinking about the flood, right? There were people all across the state were impacted. did I have some inconveniences? Did I have a, you know, a patio that flooded a little? Did I have some issues? Yeah, I did. But I didn't care so much about what happened to me. I cared about the people that were truly impacted. We had, you know, I have a family of Newton County. There's roads that are completely washed out. Like, how are you going to get to and fro? Right. And so, you know, people's homes flooded and things like this. And I think what happens sometimes when we think things don't impact us in a very direct manner, we forget to care about the people who do.
Oh, yeah? I think we're all guilty of that in a million different ways. Nobody cares until it happens to you.
Sure.
It doesn't. And that's, I'll be honest with you, kind of the libertarian warning about certain things. But when they can't see it, I mean, it's like, You can sit here and say, they shouldn't be printing all this money. They shouldn't be spending all this money. This is going to create inflation. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. 2022 comes around. Everybody suddenly cares.
Right.
You should have been watching this 13 years now. They've been printing endlessly money. This is, you know, so it's very hard until people are directly affected by something. They just don't get engaged.
And look, I mean, you know, inflation is one of those things where it does, I think, bring people together because
it should, yeah.
Everyone is impacted in one way or another. It doesn't matter on your income level, your education level. It doesn't matter where you live. You're impacted. Are there degrees of how you're impacted? Sure, absolutely, right? But everyone is impacted in one way or another. And so I think, you know, at least it's one of those areas where I think people are, I think at least the average citizen that I'm speaking to, the people we're talking to, you know, the people that are engaging, are coming together around that. And if that is a catalyst for at least that piece, right, to start actually actively engaging in that process of holding the government accountable, of having those conversations, then that's really great. I'll share with you one just quick little thing, you know, before we head to a break or something, but there was a woman, a local television station, interviewed in Jackson regarding the problems with the water, right? Now, Jackson's our capital city. You would think that running water would be a thing, right? I mean, you know, and we can laugh here about it, but let's face it.
World country stuff.
Right, exactly. We had to close the school this week because there wasn't enough water pressure in the building for students to attend, right? So she's being kind of interviewed about this problem with the water. And her comment was, I thought, very poignant. She's like, give me their paychecks. I'll go fix it.
Yeah, right.
And I think that was really poignant because all of a sudden, here's the average citizen. Here's the citizen highly impacted by this saying, you know what? I see the problem. I know it's a problem that can be fixed. We need leadership, right? Leadership's an important piece here. And she was like, you know, hey, pay me. I'll step up and lead. I'll get this done. And you know what? I want to hear more citizens think that way. I want to hear more citizens feel like I'll step up. I will help get this done. Whatever that looks like in terms of their dealing with the government.
Yeah. Well, I think that things are going to get rough. We're going to see. We're going to see if people don't. You know, because now, like you say, it is happening to them, you know, so
right.
It's a rallying cry. Oh, we're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Got to take a break. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we're here with Starla Brown, some Americans for Prosperity. Starla, I had one quick story. We'll do a short segment here and then come back and talk about what Americans for Prosperity is up to. You know, we were talking about the student loan forgiveness, and this is just going to embolden colleges to raise their prices. I've spent time in the restaurant business, and I know that if the government came out and said, hey, we know food and eating out is expensive, so we're going to go ahead and give you $10,000, your first $10,000 for eating out. Restaurant owners would go, holy crap, that's fail. You mean they're going to get, you know, we're going to take advantage of this. Everybody would raise their prices. So they passed an EV bill in their big Inflation Reduction Act, whatever the hell they called that thing. They passed a $7,500 electrical vehicle subsidy. This was in Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. In a move that can only be described as inconspicuously timed, Ford announced that week that it is raising the price of its high-end electric F-150 by $8,500.
You know? Yeah. I had an activist, I guess who saw the article or saw a post on social media bring this to my attention. And I was like, funny how that works, right?
Yeah,
funny
every
how that works.
Time.
How that works when you subsidize something rather than let a free market principle engage. How that happens.
Yeah. And when the government started subsidizing health insurance premiums under Obamacare, suddenly health insurance premiums really went up.
Right. Everything costs more, right? Because when there's that influx. And so, you know, it's kind of just simple economics 101, but we see it all the time. And, you know, getting back to sort of the thing with the student loans, too, on that piece, you know, one of the things I've wondered about over the past couple of days, because I was, you know, reading some comments from the other side, if you will, of this, of where I stand on this and our organization stands. And what I noticed is all of a sudden all the it's not fair people were not saying it's not fair to the people who've already paid off or maybe their last payment or, you know, are reaching, you know, maybe they have a year left and they're doing it. And so the problem becomes is like those people who we generally hear like, well, it's not fair. Like I didn't get my fair share is what that generally stands for. And their fair share is what the government's going to give them. All of a sudden, you're not hearing anything from them. There seems to be no mention when I look at those types of comments, across the social media spectrum. I don't see those people suddenly stepping up and saying, oh, yeah, you know, it's nice that they're giving me this $10,000, but it's actually really not fair to the people who already paid. Right. Yeah. Or it's not fair to the people who didn't take out the loan. And so I'm kind of looking for the it's not fair people to step up here and actually say something different.
Well,
or say something the same, I guess. Right.
Yeah, I believe that baseball has been replaced by hypocrisy as the national pastime from what I've seen the last several years. So anyway, we're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity, short segment. Then we'll be right back. Stick around.
From all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. So what is what's your organization focusing on these days?
We're
sorry.
That's okay. No problem.
I'll two do buttons. It. I can't be pushing buttons.
Buttons, and right, buttons and talking.
And off and yeah, okay.
A lot of multitasking there, right? So I would say one of the things that we have coming up in September, we've been doing a work over in East Central Mississippi in the Lauderdale County Meridian area. So we have another policy boot camp. Some of the people here in Jackson attended one we had not too long ago, but we're doing one over there, kind of splitting it up into two nights versus a day long kind of event. So we'll be over there on the 13th of September and the 20th of September at Weidman's Restaurant, starting, I think, about 5:30. Good time to show up somewhere.
Yeah.
And we've got some trainers coming in from out of state, and we're going to be really focusing on policy, make sure people understand the why. It's not just, you know, it's not just like, hey, you should vote for this, or, you know, your legislators should vote for this, or they should support this. Why should they do that? All right. How does it impact your life? So we're excited for those trainings. But this Saturday in our office in Ridgeland, which is at 795 Woodlands Parkway, 795 Woodlands Parkway, on the first floor there. We're going to be opening up our office, and we're kind of having a family day. So we invite people. You can bring your kids. I know that's sometimes not something you would think you could do, but we're going to be making some phone calls. We have our Tell Us What You Think Mississippi campaign that we've been working on. And, you know, we've been talking to people. We were at the Neshoba County Fair with this recently. We've been, you know, if we table or we go to a community, we have, we're handing out. And basically we're asking people to take a survey and share their thoughts and opinions with us around things like K-12 education, around healthcare, some of the things that, you know, we feel like are important not only to Mississippians, but they're important to everyone. And we're not targeting anyone in a particular party. We're not targeting it. We want to hear from everyone. And we want to see, one of the things that we want to see is what do people actually know? Because in some of these conversations, when we bring up certain topics, people don't know as much about them as we think. And so we want to be able to have those conversations with people and really get out there in the communities and the grassroots. So we're going to be tabling at a few events around this area and over, you know, and across central Mississippi. But this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., come on in the office. We've got face painting for the kids. We've got I'm going to do a story time. I'm reading one of the Tuttle Twins books, so they'll get to learn a little policy as well, but on their level. So whatever age group, you're welcome to come in, spend some time in our office. We're going to have lunch around noon, and all we ask is that you just help us make a few phone calls and make some citizen contact votes and help us talk to people and get their opinions on issues.
Yeah, I think that would be actually very interesting just to, I don't know, just talk to random people. Anytime I meet a lot of strangers through work and stuff like that, I love conversations with people just to figure out, you know, what they've got going on. I think it's fascinating to get their opinions on things. So that would be very interesting.
And the survey is, you know, kind of, it doesn't take a long time for anybody on the phone. So it's easy to tell them up front, hey, a couple minutes of your time. Sometimes that leads to further conversations, right? Because people do have questions about the questions, right? And it gives everybody an opportunity. And, you know, if we'll get you up to speed if you don't think you are. But I think a lot of our activists that are already working with us know, you know, you've been to some of our torchbearer meetings there in Jackson and kind of know our position on K-12 education, what we look at is things like certificate of need laws, right? We need competition in healthcare. We don't need to shut down competition. We need to create more jobs. We need to make sure that people have access to affordable and quality healthcare and not just an insurance card that,
I know,
that
doesn't do anything. Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, I would join you. Saturday I'm heading down to Lafayette to see my son for us to celebrate the taxpayer paying for his college.
Okay.
You know, we'll be able to spend a lot of money on some nice food and stuff like that because the taxpayer's picking up his college tab.
Should I just write you my check while I'm here?
That would be great. I don't want to have to go through the bureaucracy of
it. Instead of me giving it to the governor, I could just hand it to you directly, right?
Right. I said the same thing back. I just happened to buy a house in 2009, and I emailed all of my friends because the timing was not based on it. It was just this random. We hadn't owned a house for 3 years. I sold when I saw real estate market going crazy. Thought I was being smart, but I sold in like 2004. Mm-hmm. Took another 3 years for the housing bubble to burst. I left probably $50,000 on the table, but. So I sat out of the housing market and rented, thinking I was a genius. Then I bought again in 2009, and I got a first-time home buyer's credit. It was like, I think it was $8,500. And I emailed all my friends. I said, hey, I just want to thank you all for, you know, for ponying up for my new home.
I've been thinking about, like, you know, how we invested in a few things because you can often, there's organizations out there, nonprofit organizations that sort of fund this. But we've invested in a few things, some constitutions, and Bastiat's the law. And our hope is to make sure that people actually read these things, right? And kind of familiarize themselves with the Constitution and what it stands for. But Bastiat's the law, like when we talk about the plundering, right? The pillaging and plundering of our economy and what the proper role of government is. And, you know, and the famous thing that we all get out of the book is that taxation is theft.
Amen.
Because, you know, people are out there working hard for their money. A lot of people are. And so much of it is being taken away to give to these other types of things, such as paying off someone's student loans.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know how everyone else feels about this, but I know for my own sake, I have things I would like to do for my family with that money, things I'd like to do for my friends.
Selfish.
Maybe.
Why are you
maybe
so selfish?
Give it to my church, right? To do more in the community, because that's a great solution of a bottom-up approach versus a top-down government approach, right? And that's where, you know, I've said this in conversations when we talk about a lot of different things is like, people out there in the community that have, you know, especially those of us in a faith-based meaning that have been saying, you know, do this, do that. Well, now when laws get passed or changed or whatever that you supported, it's time then for that community to step up and step in. It's not a thing for the taxpayers to step up and do. And so the community-based approach is so much better, so much better than government.
I'm wondering what is a Kentucky coal miner who came out of high school, maybe, and ended up being the tunnels deep into the earth and very dangerous and horrible. What does he think when he sees, like, or thinks about the fact he's helping to pay off the student loans of, like, one of the kids jumping around a pogo stick on the campus of Google? You know what right. I mean? Right. Oh, this thing is just fraught with all kinds. It's going to create so much anger. Yeah. This thing is just going to. It's just,
well, you know, I was, you know, back when I was in Florida, I was working with a juvenile detention center there and, you know, facility. There was a young man who was sitting with and having a conversation one day. We had a program for that day. We did like a talent show so they could, you know, do something kind of fun. And you know, we engaged them into talking about, you know, life after being in that facility, right? And that was sort of the purpose of the event. But anyway, we were chatting and he was talking about what he wanted to do when he got out of the facility. And, you know, my immediate reaction was, well, are you going to college? What, you know, what are your plans, right? Because, you know, most parents are like, are you going to college, right? Or most grandparents in my case, right? But he said to me, no, I'm not. And I thought, oh, boy, you know, all of a sudden I had that sort of dejected feeling of what's going on. He goes, no, he goes, I looked into it and I have this interest in becoming a welder.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And so he said to me, so he started talking to me about it. And I was like, okay, you'll be making more money than me. Right. So I was like, go for it. Right. But I think that the situation is here is not everybody has to go to college. Not everybody needs to go to college. There are, I was in the construction industry for 18 years. There are incredible amount of jobs in the trade segment of things. You know, there is the military, right? I mean, you know, there's public servants in law enforcement and other pieces of
society,
you know, and where you can, you know, it doesn't mean that everyone goes to college. And so, but everyone's now paying for those who do, right? So, you know, I think about that. I was thinking about that kid the other day. I was like, you know, he's going to be a welder. He was going to, you know, had a lot of ambition around. It really was turning his life around. And yeah, I'm wondering, like, what does he think now that, you know, I'm sure he went to welding school to learn a trade.
Yeah.
Not quite the same and not the same amount of money. I wonder how he feels about paying for someone else to go to college.
This is kind of one of those things where across, it should be across partisan lines, racial lines, sure. Anything. There will be, I think, resentment for this idea. The problem is, the numbers are so big. I was really surprised before the 2020 elections the Democrats didn't do some student loan forgiveness, didn't try through Congress and say, if we can just get a president who will sign this bill, that kind of thing. You know,
right,
I really
right.
felt like it's a fantastic – you're talking about tens of millions of people. I think this bill supposedly is supposed to affect 40 million people. So it seems like it's just a – you know, when you just give away money to large masses of people, it's just a bribe, and it's that's kind of politics.
Yeah, and here we are. Our economy being leveraged for political gains.
No. I know you got to get out of here early, so why don't we finish up here and just tell us, you know, how people can follow you, anything else that you've got going
sure.
on coming up?
Sure. We're going to be spending a lot of Saturdays in our office over the next few months working on some different things here in the Ridgeland area. So if you're local listening to the show, we'll be starting some additional things over in Meridian, and we're talking to a little bit over into Vicksburg, so kind of spreading out across there. Hopefully having some new people starting up with us soon and going to be up in North Mississippi. We're probably going to be doing some tailgating events and some things like that. But, you know, this Saturday for the immediate thing, come on out, 795 Woodlands Parkway, 10 a.m., and that's in Ridgeland, 795 Woodlands Parkway in Ridgeland. Come on out from 10 to 2. Join us. Bring the family. Bring the kids. Like I said, we've got some great activities. We look forward to having a family day and really talking to our friends and neighbors around the state, you know, calling in and just really sharing some ideas and talking about issues with them.
Yeah.
See what we can.
Okay.
What we can
and
have
all details for that kind of stuff are usually on your Facebook page.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually an event up on our Facebook page at Americans for Prosperity Mississippi.
Okay.
So you can go there and get the details for the event. Kindly, if you could, and you have access to Facebook, we'd love for you to register ahead of time just so we make sure we have enough snacks, goodies,
right.
and everything.
Yeah.
for you and your family, and you can register right on there and register your, you know, your family.
I'm leaving early Saturday morning to head down to Baton Rouge and Lafayette. Can I swing by and grab a lunch? What time will the food get there if I can come by and get my lunch
might not be that early, but you know what? Coming by, I always have a breakfast bar or something. You can stop by.
All right, nothing better than Americans for Prosperity meal. I enjoy a bunch of them. All right, Starla Brown with Americans Prosperity. Thanks as always for stopping by.
Thank you. See you next week.
Okay. Bye bye. All right. For everybody else, we'll be right back. One more segment when we return.
Citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, end of the show today. I want to remind everybody, while I'm thinking about it, I was looking at some headlines, some nutrition stuff, and I want to remind everybody about Stonington Farm. That's stoningtonfarm.com. This is grass-fed, Mississippi-born, raised, and processed beef coming from a South Mississippi farm. Local farmers here, they raise their cows the right way. These are grass-fed, no antibiotics, no hormones. It's better tasting. It's significantly more healthy for you. And when you buy in bulk, if you got a freezer there or some neighbors always want to get together on a half a cow or something, it ends up saving you money from what you'll pay in the supermarket for a sub-par product. So check out Stonington Farm, stoningtonfarm.com. You can give them a call. Like I say, they're local people. They just answer the phone and answer your questions, and they will ship up to Mississippi when you buy in bulk from them. So check them out at stoningtonfarm.com. Only got about a minute left in this hour. I wanted to mention yesterday I had an interesting health show, and we're going to continue the conversation. We had Katie in with us yesterday, and she was talking about food dyes and kids' foods. If you want to, you can check out that podcast. If you got a kid that you're worried about or care about that might be having behavioral problems, emotional problems, educational problems, it may be things that are in the food. But we're going to be having Katie Morgan back with us from time to time to talk about these issues of things in the food that are affecting our kids. I cannot think of a better mission for Hump Day Health on Wednesdays than to address what's happening to our kids and letting parents know that some of the things that you're giving them in their food may be affecting their behavior and their development as young human beings. So anyway, we'll have her back on from time to time on Hump Day Health. It was a good segment yesterday. Got it cut out a little bit by the rain stuff. Anyway, hopefully it abates. Take care, everybody out there. Hope the flooding stays away, and I'll see everybody tomorrow.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter.